Reading from 1 Timothy 5:17, followed by Hebrews 13:17. The elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. Obey your leaders and submit to their authority. They keep watch over you as men who must give an account. Obey them so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no advantage to you. Dear listening friend, welcome to the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends. It's February 4th, 2015, and I opened up today's program with those two verses because I watched a very sobering film with Holly last night titled Betrayed, The Clergy Killer's DNA, When the Church Forsakes Its Own Clergy. It was about an hour and a half long, and what an eye-opener to the difficulties our pastors face on a daily basis. Reading from the back of the DVD jacket, the church, regarded as a bastion against evil, is afflicted by people perpetuating, aiding, and abetting evil within its sanctuaries, parking lots, and administrative offices. Individuals carrying out evil agendas are called clergy killers, a provocative term that is almost as shocking as the immoral and often illegal acts that clergy killers commit against pastors of congregations. Abused, avoided, and ultimately abandoned by the very churches they serve, pastors of mainstream denominations globally are being driven out of ministry forever. Dear listener, hopefully today and on Friday, I'm going to highlight some clips from this film, Betrayed, The Clergy Killer's DNA, When the Church Forsakes Its Own Clergy, to help us all better understand how we can have a supportive role with our pastors and identify and root out the evil that's causing conflict within the congregation. Both Holly and I were really moved and saddened to hear the many accounts from these pastors and clergy that have felt led and called of God to serve and yet find themselves being attacked by these clergy killers. Let me share a few statistics that are highlighted in this film, and then I'll play some excerpts to hopefully help you better understand this is an issue affecting so many of our pastors. 83% of pastors believe their ministry was a calling from God and the church. More than 1,500 ordained clergy leave active ministry every 4 weeks. Can you believe that? 1,500 active clergy leaving their ministry every 4 weeks. 90% of clergy in all denominations will not stay in ministry long enough to reach the age of retirement. Church, we have a problem here. And finally, 83% of clergy spouses want the spouse to leave pastoral ministry. So, listening friend, my primary purpose and goal and heartfelt prayer is to help us all better understand through this and Friday's broadcast to figure out how we can better support our pastors, encourage them, and identify the evil that may exist in our congregation and confront it, expose it, and remove that toxic element so it will no longer thwart the ministry that God has called our pastors to. And maybe it'll also alert us to identify problems early on and deal with them and root them out before they become a big situation. So here's some excerpts from Betrayed, The Clergy Killer's DNA, When the Church Forsakes Its Own Clergy.
A clergy killer is someone who is so intent upon destroying or running off a member of the clergy that they will stop at virtually nothing, including destroying the ministries of the church or even the church itself.
A clergy killer most often is part of a congregation. On the exterior, they're no different than anybody else. Most often, they're supporting members. They're actively involved in the life of that community. So on the exterior, I think people trust them.
Most of these folks are sharp. They don't come in with horns and a pitchfork or anything like that. They look like the rest of us. As a matter of fact, they're probably very articulate people who are in good standing in the community and in the church. But there's something in their background, a hatred of authority that has opened up the door for evil in their life. And when they get the chance, when the opportunity is right, they will take it and go after that authority figure. And in the church, it's usually the pastor.
The clergy killer
has no compunction about using whatever means that are at their disposal to achieve their ends. They will tell lies. They will smear the clergy person publicly, often in newspapers and on the radio and on the television. They will do anything to destroy their reputation. It is truly evil when we see this, and when we see these people being destroyed, and in many cases in a completely dishonest campaign.
A clergy killer is a person who wants to assert their understanding of what is important, either for their own psychological need or what they perceive to be important for the church, at the cost of the clergymen themselves. A clergy killer is a person whose goal is to get rid of a clergy person, and they stop at nothing. It's a very evil phenomenon.
I have been on the front lines. I've experienced it myself. I've seen what it's done to my colleagues. I've seen what it's done to my mentors. Two of my mentors are dead of heart attacks at the hands of constant attacks from clergy killers.
There are evil people, one or two, sometimes eight or ten, in a congregation who are willing to give themselves to evil purposes for their own narcissistic benefits. They are aggressive, they are hostile, they are mean-spirited, but they will sit in a pew and be as kind and gentle as you can imagine. But when the pastor is in their sights, they are killers. And the goal of evil in the clergy killer phenomenon is to get the pastor, to force them out of the church, and to even use other members of the congregation to help do it. The goal of the clergy killer is not to make us uncomfortable, but to kill us. And I use that word killer intentionally. When clergy killers are after a pastor, they do not stop until the damage is done and until there's a death, either metaphorically or actually.
The Reverend Dr. Robert Matten was defamed by church leaders who publicly criticized him. The United Church held a vote to terminate Robert without cause. Knowing the United Church's own policies left him defenseless, we did the one thing that we could. We prayed.
Throughout the summer before school started, I kept nagging at Bob to clean out his office, because when he had to vacate the church, all of those materials that he had accumulated, all of his notes and sermon ideas, his plans and hopes and dreams for his ministry, all had to come home, and they landed in his office in our house. And it was exploding. It could not hold everything. And so I kept nagging him all summer to clean out his office, and he never did it. So after his first week in school, I finally said, okay, this is it. You got to clean it out now. So the two of us went up there, and we eventually filled five buckets of material to throw out. Wednesday is garbage day here. And Wednesday morning, September the 17th, Bob took all those material out to the curb for the garbage truck to pick up. All his eight boxes of his life and his dreams in ministry. And the garbage truck took them away. And he went to school that day. And he came home for supper. And then he said to me he didn't feel that well, but he had some homework to do, so let's go outside for a walk. And about two blocks from our home, he collapsed on the sidewalk, never regained consciousness. He was dead of a heart attack.
As I entered the building this morning to tape this interview, I heard about the untimely death of Reverend Dr. Robert Matten. That was quite shocking. A man who's 55 years old, who dedicated his life to the church, and when he was faced with major problems by the constituency that he services, the church failed him. The hierarchy of the church failed Reverend Matten. The stress he was experiencing was added to by the lack of response by the hierarchy of the church, and I was just so saddened this morning to hear that his passing with a heart attack. at the age of 55. And I just want to say as sincerely as I can to his wife Lois and his children how sad we are and how great an individual he was. They should be immensely proud of him and his efforts to carry out the work of the church, firstly, but also his recognition of and his efforts to ensure that clergy had an independent union to represent them. He was a great human being, and I just offer the condolences and the support for the family as they go through this trying time of the 255,000 members of the Canadian Auto Workers Union.
He just collapsed one night when he was out for a walk with his partner. He died right there. You feel like blaming the church, and it's the church's fault. But you can say that he went through something that was entirely unjust, that has no place in the church. And you can say that his whole sense of calling and love for the church was broken in half. So it's right to say that he was a broken man, and his collapse, his heart attack and collapse, was, I think it's right to say, was virtually encouraged by the church. He is a story where the church breaks your heart as a minister and breaks your life, does nothing, and then literally watches you die.
My name is the Reverend Dr. Robert Madden, and I am a minister of Word, Sacrament, and Pastoral Care. I was ordained by Saskatchewan Conference of the United Church of Canada at Nipawin, Saskatchewan, on May the 29th, 1988. Beyond my own woundedness, I feel great remorse for all who suffered this loss with me. I pray that the church and all of us here might learn from this experience and ensure that it does not repeat itself. I would like to remind my ministry colleagues of the importance of speaking out, as expressed by Martin Niemöller, who referred to the terrors of Nazi Germany. First, they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Speak out. Take a stand.
About a month after Bob died, I got a card in the mail from a dear woman from the Binbrook congregation that Bob had served at. In her card, she expressed her condolences, and she also talked about the lovely memorial service that the congregations have held in Bob's memory. It was the first time I had ever heard that there had been a memorial service in memory of my husband at the congregations. I didn't know what to do next, but I thought, well, I'm going to write them a letter and ask them what went on at this service, and ask them why I wasn't invited or why I wasn't told that they were having this service. It took almost 2 months before I got a response. And the minister who led the service told me that they didn't want me there, that the congregation felt that it would be too uncomfortable for some of them to have me in attendance, so they chose not to tell me that it was going to happen. As a lifelong United Church member, active United Church member, I fully expected to get support from the United Church when my husband died. I'm still astounded that I didn't get any of that support from the congregation, not from the presbytery, not from conference. Apart from a sympathy card, I've not had any phone calls. I've had no casseroles dropped off at the door. I've had no one visiting me in the capacity of presbytery or conference or the congregation. Bob was a minister in good standing for 20 years. There's been no recognition of his ministry by the church. To be left out of that faith community when I desperately needed it the most is heart-wrenching. Fortunately, I did have support from my neighbors, from my family, from the ministers supporting the clergy union drive. But I really needed support from my congregation, from my church, from my husband's employer, from the presbytery that he was a part of for so many years. And it wasn't there.
If a church becomes chronically toxic, that it develops a reputation for killing clergy in a serial manner, you know, that it becomes a serial killer, we might say, then that church needs to be allowed to die.
The clergy killer does evil. The clergy killer role is evil. The person in that role does evil. And they do it with abandonment. They do it with sadism. They do it to take out and take down and destroy.
Clergy killers, are they possessed in a demonic way? Yes. They don't spin their heads around in public, and they don't spew blood. Horns don't grow out of their heads. But what they do and how they do it and what they say and how they say it is every bit as frightening as what you'd see in a movie theater.
Evil is not the Hollywood traditional pitchfork and horn type evil. It's often the distortion of good causes and high-sounding ideas in such a way that they're evil outcomes. And we need to understand that evil is often not about specific evil behaviors. It's about distortion of good causes.
In a clergy killer case, it's pretty compelling to think that they are possessed of something that is not good because of the way that they act in such an obsessive way, a way that is totally without reference to truth.
One of the big tragedies is the super conservative Christians make demons look funny and the devil have a tail and horns. That becomes ludicrous. The ultra-liberals kind of say evil are mistakes. There's no force of evil. There's no personal campaign of evil. They're both wrong. These images of possession, these images of the devil show evil has an agenda. Evil can take over some of the best of people, can destroy some of the best of intentions. And by golly, get to the Holy of Holies, get to the people of God, and win that battle.
Everybody is a sinner. Everyone sins. But there comes a point where there's contrition, there's sorrow, there's resolve not to commit that same sin again. A secular definition of evil could very well be this, that when someone repeatedly commits a sin, knowing that it's hurting an individual or a group, and they find pleasure from it, that is evil. You can do everything you can to stop that person, to correct that individual. But when they consistently and constantly inflict pain on another individual or a group of people and derive pleasure from that, I think that's evil.
Sometimes, with no explanation at all, you encounter somebody that you think is on retainer to the evil spirit, and who, without any personal gratification that you can see, is just deciding that whereas there are these godly principles and these noble virtues, there's a bunch of crock, they'd say. and I'm going to expose it. I'm going to strike out and destroy the churches if I can, and I'm going to start with the preacher. I wish I knew why, but there seems to be some sinister force in the universe that recruits some people to be the nemesis to heaven itself. I wish I could explain it. I at least will say I think it's real.
You've been listening to some powerful excerpts from the film Betrayed, The Clergy Killer's DNA, When the Church Forsakes Its Own Clergy. If you missed a portion of today's broadcast, it is archived at greatnewsradio.org. That's greatnewsradio.org under our archive programs link. And though this is a hard subject to talk about, I think it's an important one for all of us to be aware of. We'll continue with more excerpts and a special prayer on the Friday edition of Mark and Friends. But first, I must share a little disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on this radio program by the producers, hosts, and guests and call-in listeners are solely the opinion of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of U.S. Films, Superior Media, or its affiliates. Opinions stated by various contributors to WGNN and WGNJ and its programming are not to be considered as endorsements by U.S. Films, the sole producer of Betrayed, The Clergy Killer's DNA. Broadcast rights are extended to WGNN and WGNJ for the educational and entertainment value of its audience by U.S. Films. Betrayed, The Clergy Killer's DNA, may be purchased at the website BetrayedTheMovie.com. That's BetrayedTheMovie.com. Lots more to share and discuss on the Friday edition of Mark and Friends. I hope you can join me as we can learn more about The Clergy Killer's DNA and how we can be more supportive of our pastor and allow our church to flourish and grow under their leadership. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.